Thanks to advances in technology, a day when we might each have our own personal genome at our fingertips is coming ever closer. But what can people do with this information, and what are the issues involved? To get to grips with this brave new genetic world, I spoke to Dr. Saskia Sanderson from the Health Behaviour Research Centre at UCL and the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York. To start with, what exactly do we mean by genetic testing?
So genetic testing, it really ranges from single genetic tests for gene variants that we really know quite a lot about. So a good example of that would be the BRCA1 and 2 gene variants that are strongly associated with risk of breast cancer. Then you have other genetic tests for single gene variants, which really we use for research purposes, where you're looking at, single gene variants associated with a very slightly increased risk of a common complex disease like heart disease, lung cancer, that kind of thing. But those kinds of tests have also, for the last few years, been available in direct to consumer.
So to the general public, you can get one on the internet, basically.
Yes, although that has recently changed. There have been developments recently that have made that less available to people. But I think we might be in a sort of moment in time where it sort of is less available. I think it's probably going to come back again. We also have genetic testing for ancestry, which a lot of people are really interested in at the moment. So many people are interested in genealogy. That is a very kind of sort of booming industry, if you like.
The kind of recreational genetics.
Yes, but recreational very specifically about where did you come from? Very specifically about, that side of things, rather than the disease risk side, or this will help you about your health.
It's basically, am I a Viking?
Yes. Exactly that, yeah.
And now we're starting to move to an era where we have the ability to sequence entire genomes. People can have their whole genomes done.
Yes.
Is that something that's starting to become more common, and will it become commonplace in the future?
I think we're certainly seeing more and more of it, obviously. I mean, we know that, of course, it's only a matter of 15 years ago it cost $3 billion to see, took 15 years to sequence the first human genome. You can now do it for $5,000 and it takes a few days. So, it's certainly becoming clearly more commonplace. It's happening a lot more for research purposes. Many people are having their genome sequenced now as part of research studies. We're certainly seeing more of it, but I wouldn't say it's commonplace yet. We're still a long way to go. We're still a long way from having that, all of us having our whole genome on a USB stick that we take to our doctor, carry around with us. That's not going to happen for a while, but more and more people are having it done. And, in the UK, just last year, we had, we now have the launch of the 100,000 Genome Project, where there are going to be thousands of people within the NHS having their genome sequenced for both clinical and research purposes.
So it's likely that in the future, more and more of us in the general public are going to have to grapple with quite complex genetic data. We hear the language of genes in the headlines, gene for this, gene for that. People are going to have to start engaging with genomic testing and genetic testing. What do you think are some of the kind of issues that are going to come up or are coming up already?
I mean, I think what you just said is one of the first things that we need to make sure that people do start, that we start getting across, which is there are not genes for anything. We have variants within genes that affect how the gene works, how the protein product works, and basically it's these variations in your DNA that affect your disease risk, affect how tall you are. There aren't genes for heart disease. There aren't genes for disease. There are genes that do things, and sometimes they work better and sometimes they work worse. So I think that's obviously one of the things that we will, that we need to make sure that it's a starting point. That's where we need to make sure people understand. Many people argue that genetic information is just one more piece of health information, in the way that your blood pressure is information about your risk of disease, and this is another piece of information. And I think in many ways that's true, but I do think genome sequencing takes us to a whole other level where we're now just, people are going to have to get their heads around a large amount of data. That said, there is another important consideration, which is that I think we're used to thinking about tests as a sort of one-time test. And what we may also sort of want people gradually to kind of get their heads around as well is that having your genome sequence might be something that happens at one point and then it's a resource. It's not actually something that you get all the results from in one go.
Here you are, off you go.
That's right. This is you on your USB stick. Actually, what might happen, and what's probably more likely, is that, you know, you do have your genome sequence, but then that can be accessed at different times in your life and for different purposes. So, you know, so then you access it perhaps when you're a reproductive age, thinking about having children, perhaps when you it looks like, you know, certain diseases developing. There will be different things in your life where different times in your life where different bits of your genome or different looking for different things within your genome will be important. So it could also be helpful to start thinking about your genome as a resource rather than your genome sequence and the sequencing of your genome and more as a resource rather than a test.
We know that we're a product of nature and nurture. You know, we have our genes that they interact with our environment and the things that we do, our lifestyle. So when people get this kind of information, what do they do with it?
So I think the question partly depends on what you mean by this information. The research that we've been doing, you know, we started about 10, 15 years ago, was looking at how people responded to getting genetic risk information about their risk of lung cancer. So here we're clearly talking about something, a disease, very clearly has a strong environmental behavioural component, smoking. But also, I think people know, they say to us, you know, I know that my grandmother smoked 20 a day, maybe 60 a day, until she was 80 and she didn't die of lung cancer. And therefore, it's not all behavioural, it's not all caused by smoking. They know that something else is going on. That thing could well be, of course, your genetic risk. It's what you bring to genetically to the table. We still don't know very much about the genetics of diseases like lung cancer. We still don't know, but we know something. We know a lot more than we did, and we're going to know more, you know, in the coming years. So I think that one way to answer that question is that people already have some understanding that disease is complex, life is complex, and that maybe by sort of bringing genetics into the story, that it could actually be a helpful thing, because it is part of the story, and to kind of ignore that or pretend that it's not part of the story, even when it's in the context of something that which is so clearly affected by your behaviour, like lung cancer, smoking, that may just be something that we have to deal with.
For example, the more that we understand about our genomes and things like the risk of diseases like cancer, and is there a risk that someone's just going to go, oh, well, it's all in my genes, you know, there's nothing I can do, or, oh, well, my granny smoked and drank like a fish and she was fine, so I don't need to bother.
Yeah, I mean, we hear so much about this in my field. And, you know, it has this term sort of genetic determinism or genetic fatalism. And I have to say, we absolutely cannot find evidence of it. When we do the empirical research, which we have done, you know, we give genetic risk information about lung cancer to smokers, albeit, you know, it's very small pieces of risk information. It's influencing your risk this way or that way, a small amount. There is no evidence that when we tell a smoker that they have a slightly lower risk of lung cancer than somebody else based on their genes, that they then go out and say, oh, well, it's all right, then I can smoke as much as I want. And similarly, when we tell smokers that they have a slightly increased risk of lung cancer, they don't go, oh, my goodness, well, it's all in my genes, there's nothing I can do about it. We've seen that in lung cancer. Others have seen it in all sorts of areas. We're still at the beginning of research in this field, but I have to say, you know, nobody can find evidence of that so far. I do think that's important for people to recognise. And I think, you know, truthfully also, I think if I give somebody some genetic risk information and they go off and think that they go off and think it's safe for them to smoke, or they go off and think that they're doomed, I've done a terrible job of communicating that information to them. It's important we communicate the information well. And I have to say, you know, across all the research studies that I've seen, I have yet to see a study where people have gone off and thought either of those things. So I think empirically the evidence for that so far simply isn't there.
So you can't use your genome as an excuse for not trying to live a healthy lifestyle?
No.
That was Saskia Sanderson from UCL and the Icahn School of Medicine.